have to take into effect the ebbs and flows of your business throughout the year. You may have busier months or quieter months or whatever, or you may have months when you're incurring greater expenses just because of the nature of that month out of the year. And one of the things that I found very beneficial is look at last month's data, especially profit sharing or profitability, profit and loss, cash flow, that kind of thing, relative to the same month a year ago.
Welcome back to View From Above at long last. It's been a little while, Jonathan. I think the last show that we did was the snow show when I had the snow in the
background. I think it was the snow show, yeah.
Yeah, so that was at least January, so it's been a couple of months. How you been, man?
I've been good, you know, dealing with, I think, the crud that everybody has been dealing with on and off through over the last couple of months. I've had people in our office that had it and shared it, and it seems to stick for weeks. Not, I'm sick for a day or two and I'm out and then I'm back. It's like it was hanging in my lungs. Sounds a little bit like it's hanging. It's that kind of same thing is hanging in your lungs. And it's just like, other than that, you know.
Well, welcome back. It's good to see you again. So as we start to roll through the calendar here, there's a few pretty important dates that are kind of looming about. For everybody, but especially business owners, there's a few extra responsibilities, deadlines right. That fall on business owners before the April 15th tax deadline. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about what you're working with your clients on around this time of year. Mm-hmm. What are some of those items on the checklist that are either need to be checked off or maybe should have been checked off or prepared for ahead of time, but especially now with where we are. What should business owners be thinking about to try to help them out come April 15th?
Sure. Well, so the date I think most everybody knows, corporate income taxes technically due March 15th. Extensions go out till September. But when you file or request the extension by March 15th, you kind of have to have the corporate taxes sort of figured out at the very least. In certain cases, it's going to be a K-1, so you don't really have to be paying any money to the government. But you still got to be generating something that otherwise your April 15th personal income taxes is going to have to be extended as well. And then it just kind of creates this cascade of effects. So it is really good. And I've always felt from a fractional CFO standpoint, if you can't get your numbers together from the previous year by now, the numbers become increasingly meaningless, right? So now you're just moving numbers around on paper, but you can't, if you don't act on those numbers, really you should be doing it in January and maybe February, then you've lost a great opportunity to have the data be able to drive better decisions. And, you know, since that's a lot of what we do from a CFO standpoint is we're trying to plan out and figure out what the next several months, years are going to look like and start thinking proactively. If your response time is, well, I'm looking at numbers from 6 months ago, that's like trying to drive your car on a highway at you know, 70 miles an hour, based on what was in your rear view mirror, you know, about an hour ago. It just doesn't do any good for you. And it's a wasted opportunity. Being the numbers nerd and the CFO that I am, I like numbers a lot more than I understand a lot of business owners do, but data is just data. And the key is getting data that is usable to inform the best, most optimal decision making possible. And if you're looking at data that's stale, then you're just not going to get the best decisions out of that data either. Right. So we just really want to be on top of things. This was work that we were doing in January, especially with a lot of the clients. February, trying to get it wrapped up there so that they can be having their accountants work on their tax forms and actually get it done by March 15th and not just begging for an extension. And then they can be getting focused on their personal income taxes, get those done in a timely manner, and get that wiped off, because that's just really – it's more like an albatross on your shoulder. It's just – stuff that's got to get done. Let's get it done. Move forward so we can actually be thinking about the things that we should be. And this time of year, one other housekeeping thing that we're working on, because we do a lot of work with folks with qualified plans, especially if those plans are the new comparability type or require some level of testing, getting the data in so that the actuaries can actually do the testing and making sure that you are meeting the minimum standards, as well as determining how much profit sharing you can declare, all that stuff. You need to get that to the actuaries because they do take 6 to 8 weeks, typically speaking, to turn around and get you back your report and finalize the numbers so you can actually do that profit sharing. You cannot file a tax return until your profit sharing has been submitted, right? Because that is part of what you're, if you're doing a profit sharing distribution, that is part of what's on that tax form. And the whole reason why we have these qualified plans, one of the reasons why is because of that deferral that you're allowing yourself to have, right? The tax advantages. And if you're not declaring any of your taxes, you're wasting another opportunity that's in front of you. So getting those qualified plan testing reports, whatever you need to do, get it submitted so that whoever is doing those reports and can figure it out and make sure that you are compliant with ERISA rules for your particular type of plan, do those as soon as you can. So that's the last of the housekeeping. We're kind of wrapped up with that with clients. But if you're not one of our clients, maybe this is the first you're hearing of it, which is fine. It's not the end of the world, but you do want to be getting to the, you know, talking to whoever your plan advisor is, and confirming that you've done everything you need to do to put that qualified plan to bed, so that you know the tax form can be filed for it, and you can move on. For the same reasons as with taxes, because if you're operating off data and you're submitting it to the government, you know, in June, July, August, yes, you can do that, but you're also now you can't make really effective decisions about what's going on in the plan or adjustments you want to make to the plan until you've sewed up what happened last year. And why wait till August to make those decisions when you could be making them right now if you had the data?
What are some examples? You were talking there a minute ago about using the data to make better decisions, and looking in the rearview mirror going 70 miles an hour is a good analogy for that. What are some examples, if you have them, you can use for either, you know, past, present, your business, clients, whatever the case may be, of using that data at the right time and the right way to make a good decision, maybe compared to using it at the wrong time in the rearview mirror going 70 miles an hour and maybe leading to a bad decision?
So especially annual data that may be associated with taxes, I think that the tendency, it feels like the tendency for a lot of folks, because whether it's a resistance to wanting to have to pay attention to data more than necessary, right? So we default go to, well, what's the simplest way? Well, I have to do this stuff for taxes. I have to do this annual work right now. So I now have to do that every year. So I'm going to do that and then try to make decisions off that. I actually don't find the best decision making comes from annual data. But what happens, what I see a lot is business owners say, well, I have to do this annual stuff, so I'll do that. And that's what I'm going to use to make my decisions. So they're grounding all their decisions based on this annual data. And then they're doing that again in June, July, or August, and trying to make decisions based on annual data that ended in December 31 of the previous year. So what we're looking at, we tend to look at, is try to pull financials that are much more recent and shorter periods, 13-week cash flows. That's a really big one from a planning standpoint. 13-month cash flows, 13-month P&Ls. So we're seeing, where are we from a P&L standpoint on, say, in February, because we're now in March, what was February's P&L relative to February of last year, as well as relative to January of last year? The problem with just going from P&L from a month relative to the previous month is you have to take into effect the ebbs and flows of your business throughout the year. You may have busier months or quieter months or whatever, or you may have months when you're incurring greater expenses just because of the nature of that month out of the year. And one of the things that I found very beneficial is look at last month's data, especially profit sharing or profit and loss, cash flow, that kind of thing, relative to the same month a year ago. And if you can do it, ideally, relative to the same month 2 years ago. Why? You start to see these trends. It's like, you know, you get in this swing of things on a month-to-month basis or a week-to-week basis and doing like this, and you can, like, it's kind of like the forest for the trees. It's like, I feel disappointed because I'm not doing as well as I did last month. And it's nice to have that historical perspective. It's like, yeah, but last year in February, you know, we're going through we're experiencing the same ebbs and flows, and I'm up 10% month, you know, year over year for that month period, that 1 month period. So I actually feel okay with that. And especially over 2 years ago, hey, we're 20% better than we were, or whatever the numbers are. Whereas if you also look at that and you look at February and you look at February versus the previous year and you're down 3% versus the previous year, that's useful data. It's like there is something going on. We need to dig deeper. And if you start digging deeper into February right now, we're what, a week into March, you can actually pull useful information out of that to think about, maybe do we need to make a quick adjustment? Is this a longer range thing that's going on, or are we seeing a trend change? And, you know, by the way, here this is being recorded a couple of days after the latest State of the Union address, which, and the latest declaration of tariffs, and then those tariffs are being removed. And I mean, there's a lot of volatility in our business world right now. And in order to be able to manage that volatility, and it's kind of going back to that analogy, if you're driving a car and you're looking in the rearview mirror and you're trying to figure out what's coming up ahead of you, not so great, but you got, you know, the data's in the rearview mirror. That's what you know, right? And what you see in front of you is what you're anticipating, or you can see some things, but you may not be able to see it all. But if you're looking at in the rearview mirror at what happened, you know, an hour ago, that's really useless relative to right now. But if you keep looking at that same analogy, and you're talking about, we know that what you're seeing in front, right, through that windshield, we know it's turbulent. We know there are white caps on the water, if you're using a boat analogy, or you know, we know that the road ahead seems to have some construction and some debris and some flags and detours. It's like, we know that's coming, but we want to know what that, you know, looks like. Well, it really helps to say, to be identifying things that are in the immediate rearview mirror that are telling us, hey, wait a minute, this is a trend that's already going on year over year. And that's why, you know, I like to keep the data as fresh and as shorter term as possible. 1 month, ideally 1 week. Most businesses are pretty cyclical, but repeat pretty closely week over week if you're 1 year back, right? So this week may be a busy week for me because it's the second week in March, and the first week is not, just because of how things work. But second week in March this year is going to be, compared to second week in March last year, hey, you know what? That's actually a pretty useful comparison, because it tells me it smooths out all the roughness that we see in the day-to-day activity.
Case in point, I was looking at my financial statements or bank statements or something probably a week or so ago, and I'm an extreme case of what you're just talking about there, because I kind of reset a lot of things in my business over the last couple of years, and they bottomed out. Like last January, February, and March were by far the worst months I've ever had. I mean they were horrendous. And then I happened to have a pretty nice January and February this year. I just happened to look, the number that showed up on Stripe or the bank statement, whatever it was up like 542% year over year. And I was like, whoa, that's awesome, until I remembered how little I had made last January and February. Yeah. But if I can keep that trend up for a couple more years, I'll be doing all right. That's a great example of what you're talking about. You need a larger data set to realize that, no, this isn't just that my business happened to grow that much. It just happens to be a really good time divided by a really bad time.
Right. Maybe it didn't grow that much from a dollar on a dollar basis, but on a percentage basis, it probably looked pretty dang spectacular, right?
That's right. If you can grow 542% or whatever the number was every year over year, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, 542% increase over a dollar. It's
not that much.
$142.
That's right. So you touched on something there I want to dig in a little bit there, the volatility of the business climate right now. It's ironic. the hour right before this show I do, the Intelligent mm-hmm. Investment Show, which is a stock market show. We were talking about the volatility of the stock market, which is a version of what you're talking about. But the administration and the tariffs and all the policy, I spent a lot of time on that show talking about what it means for the stock market. But what does it mean to the small business owner out there? What all the things we're seeing in the news, what do they mean for the business owner, and what can they do and what's out of their hands to be able to do anything about when it comes to decision making?
Yeah, so I think right now especially the Trump administration is hell-bent on doing is doing something and making decisions and moving the needle, right? And in a lot of ways, I applaud that because at least something's happening. But it will, you know, a little disingenuous on Tuesday night. He said, well, we might have a little bit of a kerfuffle, you know, just a little disturbance here and there. And it's like, that's selling it really short. My sense is over the next 6 to 9 months, we'll have tremendous volatility. Some of it'll be good. Some of it'll be just sheer ugly. And there is no time more important than right now for A, being nimble, B, business owners keeping their options open, as in don't make decisions that closes doors on potential changes down the line. The lay of the landscape right now is not going to be the lay of the landscape 3 months from now, and certainly not a year from now. So optionality is absolutely the most important aspect of everything you're looking at. If you have a choice, one choice is I'm going to cement this, I'm going to lock this in, and we're good. And the other choice is I'm not going to close any doors, and I'm going to nibble this one and keep the availability to go one of three different directions in the next week or month or whatever, then by all means, go with option B, which is more than one option. You know, making hell-bent decisions on things. Now, do we have to make decisions? Yes, and we may have to make commitments to investments, but making those commitments to investments sometimes can be paired in more of the risk-return strategy. It's like when, and I'll use the parallel to the stock market just because I'm fairly familiar with that space as well. If you were to have bought NVIDIA when it was at its high, right? After it's been climbing more than 100% over a year, right? And so it does this rocket launch thing, goes straight up like this, and it gets up to this point, and then it's kind of rolling over. But we haven't seen the distance between that new high and the last low, even may have been 2 or 3 months ago, is like 30-40%. So it's well within the realm of possibilities. And even if NVIDIA in the long haul is going to be continue going up like this, it may come back down. And you know, why make the decision to lock in an investment when you have this potential loss of 25-30%? When maybe the best thing would be to hang on that one because you kind of maybe already lost some of the opportunity to go and get to look for more opportunities where your investment has already come down from that high. You know what the potential is, you know, but you also know where the floor is and it's a lot closer to where you are. And that would be the more optimal investment decision, whether you're, you know, investing in a factory, buying a house or whatever that investment your business is doing. That would be looking at those investments in terms of relative to the grand scheme of things. Is this, you know, am I buying it rich or am I buying it poor? It goes back to some of the basics of true what investing is. And that's not just the Warren Buffett basic of investing, but any business investment that we're doing, we're looking at a CapEx project is, am I buying this and am I paying a dear price for it right now just because everybody else is buying into it right now? And be looking at strategically, it's like, I don't really want to be buying things when they're super expensive. You know, buy stuff when it's on sale. Sell stuff when it's, you know, when the price is through the roof. And think in terms that strategically that way about the investments your business is making. So there are going to come times, and I think this volatility will generate that even more so more great opportunities for us business owners to say, hey, you know what? I wanted to expand a new store. And now everybody else is moaning and groaning, and I kept my capital ready to go so that I could expand in a new store when things were 20% less expensive than they were when everybody thought everything was great. And I'm just going to, you know, when it's safe and it looks great and it's been going gangbusters for months, that's really not necessarily the best time to make that investment at that moment for a business.
Yeah, and I think there's something I've experienced in my business over the last several months, and I think it applies. I mean, you could run analogies on and how these are similar in a lot of different walks of life, I guess. But you can swing too hard to either extreme, and we may have even talked about this on the show a little bit before, but you can try to force square pegs into round holes sometimes really swim upstream and against the grain for no reason. And you can also probably go the other extreme where you probably give yourself too much flexibility that you end up not having really any real direction either. Yeah. But when it comes to your expenses or your business strategy or whatever you're trying to do, I think a lot of times erring on the side of flexibility makes a lot of sense in leaving yourself options, leaving yourself out maybe and not putting all your eggs in a basket, so to speak, whether, like I said, from a strategy standpoint or from a a capital expenditure standpoint. One thing in particular that I've been doing is trying to be somewhat niche in some of the stuff that I'm doing. And what I'm finding is I keep finding opportunities that are outside of my niche that I hadn't thought of. And that is, it's like, well, now I kind of need to redefine what I'm doing a little bit because it's a little bit broader than maybe what I thought. And that's a good thing. That's not it's never bad to have more options. And certainly when you're looking at how to deploy capital, leaving yourself flexibility is one of the keys to business is having that flexibility to be able to stay in business if things don't go exactly the way you expected.
Yeah, I'll put some guardrails on that concept because I tend to agree. It's like you always want to have as many options as possible. You also want to, when you're approaching those various options as they're and those decisions that are coming at you, you want to for sure keep a couple things in mind. Number one is lost opportunity cost, right? So if you make an investment or you decide you're going to go down one path, you decide you're going to take on this new route for your business, right? Because you realize that, you know, maybe you were too narrow in your approach. But you do that, you are going to take resources, time, energy, maybe money, who knows, right? And you are going to deploy them. And once you deploy those resources towards that end, it can't be deployed towards some other option that comes down the pipe. So we always want to make sure that we're making those decisions within a framework of, is this an ideal setup for exploring that option or moving in that direction? So that is probably one of the more important things. And then the secondary one is there a way that I can explore or go with one option that does not close the doors completely on the other options? So maybe instead of doing a CapEx project with $10 million, which is basically your CapEx budget for the whole, you know, for the whole year or maybe even 2 years, it's like, what if I did this $1 million CapEx project, which would help us to set the table for a bigger one down the line, give us some feedback and data to tell us whether or not that area that we are exploring is going to be a good area. And if we have to cut losses, well, you know, $1 million, nobody wants to have cut losses on $1 million, but sure as heck is a lot better than cutting losses on 10 million, right?
Yeah. That's about 1,000% better than 10 million. I believe.
Right. Exactly. So, going back to your 500%, 532% improvement, right?
Well, and also I think that, you know, fairly quickly here, we'll kind of wrap up. But I mean, I think to your point there, leaving yourself flexibility and trying to figure out, you know, trying to weigh that decision of, you know, is there a way to reverse this? Is there a way to dip my toe in the water in there? And is there a way to minimize that lost opportunity cost elsewhere? And trying to do that sort of a delicate dance, maybe, so to speak. But I think that is, it is kind of balancing all of the all of the above, mm-hmm. right? And figuring out how to minimize your risk and also maximizing your efficiency. And maybe my question to this is, how do you help clients or even the way you evaluate your own business kind of judge or try to weigh, is the juice really worth the squeeze in this particular area versus another, right? Because there might be some opportunities that are out there that, yeah, you're giving up flexibility, but it's really worth it. Or there may be others where you're not really giving up that much flexibility, but you're going to put a lot of energy into something that might make a 0.2% difference at the end of the day, right? Is it really worth all the trouble and the efficiency that, or the lost efficiency of going down that road? Mm-hmm. And that can be another angle that you have to kind of keep in mind also.
Well, yeah, so the answer is finding people who can, professionals who can provide a framework, again, around which those decisions can be made that is more data-driven, less emotion-driven, right? So it's really easy for us to say, you know, I feel like this is going to make my business more efficient. Well, okay, well, that's great. How much more efficient? You know, from a percentage standpoint, what does that mean? How does that translate to the bottom line? And I think the second part of that is if you decide that you're going to go with something and it is a bit more data-driven, is you also coming up with the scorecard, the metric that says, I tried this and it worked, or I tried this and it didn't work. And the one area that I see so many business owners struggling is not having metrics and scorecards. So they do these CapEx experiments and they really don't know, was it successful or not? And they don't have or they go, oh, well, it definitely wasn't successful and I'm a bad person because I did it. It's like, get off the bloody good-bad paradigm. It's like, it's not like that, right? And we are so wanting to, even as business owners, even me, you know, and I'm a data wonk, it's so easy just to get back on the good-bad paradigm and start looking, framing things about I'm a failure or I'm a success because this worked or that didn't work or whatever. And we really need to back off and just say, well, what's the data saying to us? Would there have been a better way to do it? Can I tweak it now and maybe get that, you know, slightly better performance out of what I have? No matter how good the performance is or no matter what the benchmark says, hey, it was a success. Could it have been even more successful? The people who are the business owners and business managers and the titans of the business world who are the most successful are the ones who look at everything they do and are constantly optimizing each of those things, right? They're looking at the data and they're saying, that was great. That was a 212% increase. Awesome. I am not going to, right? I'm going to feel really good about that. But the next question that comes out of every one of their mouths is like, how can we either keep it going at that rate? What do we need? How could it have been better? How could it have been worse? And understand what that is as much as possible. It helps making your decisions going forward so much easier.
Yeah. Well, and I totally agree that finding a professional to help with that would go a long way. Do you happen to know anybody or have someone you could recommend that does that type of work?
Maybe just one or two people. And again, love to have the opportunity to do that. If you have questions, if you're a business owner, you have questions. I mean, just pick up the phone, contact our office. I'm happy to sit down. And, you know, we do lots of with anybody. I'm more than happy to say, hey, tell me about your business, what you're trying to accomplish. What are you looking at? Where do you think your struggles are? I'll have a conversation with anybody for an hour and I just gleaning what I can out of it. And I'm happy to do that. If there's a fit, great. If there's not a fit, fine. But if you don't want to go with me, but do find that third party, that professional who is going to be able to look at it and has been around the ropes enough and seen enough businesses to know that, you know, or to even just ask the questions, what are your metrics? Where's your scorecard? What are you trying to accomplish? Boy, that question alone, for so many business owners, every time I ask it, it's like, well, tell me what you're trying to accomplish. And they go, you know, I'm not sure. And that's okay, right? Well, how can we help you figure out what it is you're trying to accomplish? How do we help you get that scope? Whatever your business is, we know it can do better, and we know you can make even more optimal decisions. Sometimes it's just getting yourself the bandwidth to be able to do that. Sometimes it's jettisoning things. Sometimes it's just getting better data. Who knows what it is? But that would be where I would start. It's just, you got questions, get somebody to give you that third-party view. That's why we call this podcast what it is, right? You know, view from above, is get somebody who can help give you that view from above and get you out of the forest for the trees for a moment and really answer these important questions.
Yeah, 100%. And wherever you are enjoying this podcast from, whether it's you're listening to it or watching on YouTube, wherever you're at, find the description, and there will be a link to AllTheFluff.com where you can find more information about John, how to reach out to him, and how to contact him if you would like to implore on his services. I'm sure he would be happy to chat with you. John, thank you, as always, for your time and your insights. Always a pleasure. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you here in a couple of weeks.
Yep.